From NPR Music, you're connected to All Songs Considered. I'm Bob Boylan. There are some musicians simply after my own heart. Daniel Lanois is one of them. He makes music that's sonically seductive, one of those perfect blends of technology and soul. Daniel Lanois came to NPR and performed a Tiny Desk concert with his musical partner, Trixie Whitley. That collaboration is new, and their just-released self-titled record is called Black Dub. Every so often, we invite a musician to be a guest DJ, and today we have Daniel Lanois. Lanois grew up in rural Quebec in the 1950s, and I wondered if the first music he heard was on the radio or if he had a musical family.
First music I remember from when I was a kid would be the music around the house. My grandfather and father were violin players.
They call them violins or fiddles.
Violoneux.
Huh? Me neither.
Violoneux, which means fiddlers. And they were not professionals. They knew the jigs, and it was really just kind of weekend entertainment. And then on my mom's side, we had a lot of singers. So the uncles sang these kind of funny old Quebec folk songs.
Did you pick up an instrument young?
I was not playing at the time of the folk music and from the family.
So tell me, years, age, kind of just...
This was all in Quebec in Canada, which is north of Vermont. For those who haven't been north of the border. And then my mother transplanted the family to Hamilton, Ontario, which is right near Buffalo, New York, on the Canadian side. And that's where I started playing music. I was fascinated with the clarinet, funny enough. I wanted to play clarinet.
What made you think clarinet? I mean, that I could see guitar, I could imagine.
I don't know, just probably something I saw on TV. Yeah. I thought clarinet was, there was something sweet about it, and
Not when you first pick one up, I bet, though.
No, I stuck to my story. My mom used to give me $1 a week to go to the Saturday cinema. And on the one Saturday, I passed by this little music store, and it had something in the window that looked a little bit like a clarinet, and it had a price tag of $1 on it, and I bought it. It was a plastic penny whistle, essentially.
Like we used to call them, I think it's the same sort of thing, as those little white things.
Yes.
With the red mouthpiece, kind of.
Exactly.
I had one of those. We call them flutophones.
Oh, flutophones.
At least I went to New York grade schools, and everybody had to play the flutophone. So we played Far, Far Away, and we played, Hot Cross Buns. And
okay, well,
hopefully you played something better than that.
Well, you know the feeling. Yeah, I'm just addicted to this little plastic whistle. Uh-huh. Played it for a couple of years, and then and I was very happy with that. I had a nice life. And then one day a man knocked on my mom's door, and he said, "Do you have any kids that like music?" She said, "Yeah, that one over there, he likes music." And I passed the aptitude test, and then I qualified for music lessons. And they gave me a choice between accordion and slide guitar. So I took slide.
Nice. But that's an odd choice. At least, I mean, I can't imagine someone knocking at the door and saying, "You want music lessons?" But I can't imagine those as the choices. I can see violin again. I could see something classical, but slide guitar?
Yeah, I think it was there was a fad at the time where the slide guitar had become real popular. Maybe it was sort of the back end of the Hawaiian craze, where there are a lot of lap steels.
What year are we talking about here?
We're talking 60, okay. 61.
So buying your first, I always love hearing stories because there's something usually good about either saving your dimes or pennies for a first piece of music. Do you have one?
Well, the school supplied me with a slide guitar at first, but during that time, it was like the era of the Sears catalog. Mm-hmm. You could order a guitar from the catalog, and I bought a Beltone guitar and amp, I think for a total of $49 for both of them, and they were delivered to the house. I saved my paper route money and bought those two pieces.
Wow.
And they were great. It was just kind of generic.
You were how old?
I guess I would have been about 12 then.
Had you been buying music itself? Had you been buying records? Had you been buying 45s and all that?
Yes. We had a nice console stereo in my mom's place, kind of everything in one box.
Yeah.
And I used to listen to surf music. So the first record I bought was Wipeout by the Safaris, with Surfer Joe as the B-side.
Nice. Well, I brought you in to play some songs. You want to play something from of what you've chosen? I don't know which, because they're all ears. They're sort of all over the map. There's you want to pick something from when you were young?
I could pick something, yeah. Well, I won't follow chronology here, but I will tell you that even at this present time, I try and mix flesh with technology. And it's always a fascinating challenge, you know, because you want music to have a lot of feeling and dynamic in it, but who can deny the power of technology? So this is a very fine example of a great mixture of the two, and it's a song by Sly and the Family Stones called In Time from an album called Fresh. Maybe one of the funkiest tracks ever.
Such an unusual track. That guitar is from another planet. I was thinking it reminded me a bit of Sun Ra or something.
Yeah, it has a little bit of African tonality in it. It's got some Leo Nocentelli in it.
Who is that?
Leo Nocentelli was a guitar player for the Meters.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And he often played with a very light sound, but from a deep place. But I love the fact that this has so much emotion in it, and yet there is a beatbox in there. So it's just a nice reminder that...
There's a beatbox? That's not a drum?
The initial thing you hear is a beatbox, and then the drums come in, and that's a lovely compliment to the box. So it places the responsibility on us. You know, it's not about whether the box is happening or not. Yeah. It's like what you make of it. But I was telling my friend Trixie Whitley.
Your partner in the group Black Dub that you're working on now.
Yeah, she's a member of Black Dub, and we're having a great time with that. And we share some common love for certain tracks, this being In Time being one of them. And I was telling Trixie, I was lucky to hear Sly and the Family Stone live just down the street from where I was living as a kid. They must have been passing through Detroit and going to Toronto, and they made a little pit stop outside of Hamilton, and it was just a community center, and I got to stand right in the front and watch them do their thing. And I tell you, man, I walked out of there with a PhD.
That's just fantastic. Why don't you pick us another one before I play something of yours?
Okay. High school is a place where, you know, a lot of decisions get made, and we enter sexuality and those early years of schooling, and maybe the best lesson I ever got was hearing Foxy Lady by Jimi Hendrix, and I thought, I've had enough of this school, I'm going out to the street.
Yeah. sexy lady.
A great lesson in rock and roll there, because the drumming is not only superb, but is sonically from the past. It might as well be Elvin Jones from the 50s in terms of tone. And we forget those lessons sometimes, we rock and roll record makers, that it's okay to use an open tone, and it's okay to keep the drums sunken back a little bit and let some of the other ingredients speak, like the lyrics.
Do you think it was they used more room than close up on the miking of something like that? I mean, you hear it.
I think it has to do with Mitch Mitchell's drumming. He was a jazz drummer, and that's just the way he played, and that's the sound they got. Brian Blade, who's also in Black Dub, has a similar tone, and that's why we love playing with him. That he's got the heart of a lion, and he's rocking from inside, but the tones are brighter and. Perhaps deeper in the end, if you don't have to depend on so much technology to get them to penetrate through a track.
And there was nothing like that guitar-wise. I mean, when you heard that when you were growing up, right? That was it. There was nothing you'd ever heard that came close to being that way, right?
You have to admire the people who invent a form, and I think Jimi Hendrix is one of those people. As James Brown, you know, invented his own form, and to have been there as a kid when Jimmy invented his thing was, I think it set a standard for me. I mean, not that I could ever align myself with Jimmy as a guitar player, but as an innovator, I like to reference him.
That's Cooper.
Just for me to go into the studio and try and do what Jimmy might have done if he was still around.
And it's amazing, because it's not like he had a dozen stomp boxes where you see, you know, every guitar player you see has, you know, all these boxes to help make their sound. He didn't have all that much to do it. But
Jimmy only ever had one or two pedals on stage. I think we can assume it was there in his heart and in his hands, you know, in his vision.
I'd like to play something of yours. This is, I think, maybe the first time I saw your name on a record. And maybe it was there before, but the one that I remember most, it was in the bigger letters that I'd seen before, and it was on a Brian Eno record, the Atmospheres record.
Apollo.
Apollo.
Atmospheres.
Yeah.
Can
I play a little and you listen for a bit?
One of my favorite records I made with Eno.
Daniel, how do you get to an emotion like this? I mean, where does it start? Where does it come from? How does it work for you?
Well, obviously, you know, we set up sounds in the studio and get to a place where we can perform. But I think, you know, the emotion of the music comes from the people. And Brian Eno is a great force. He's a great emotional artist. And whenever we play together, on a good day, we get to that place pretty quick. And that's that track, is it called Weightless?
Yeah,
Weightless was done with very little equipment. You know, we use this little, the beat is and the bass is provided by a little Omnicord. It's like a toy instrument. And then his brother Roger is playing the Fender Rhodes. I'm on slide guitar, and Eno's doing these great atmospheres at the end. They're very, very touching. So just three people in a room with not much equipment. But that's often the case, you know, is if you don't have a lot to choose from, then as resourceful musicians, you make what you have work.
Mm-hmm. Well, this was done for a project by NASA, right? I mean, did you work off photos? I'm just wondering where you start, I guess, is where I'm going there, if it's possible to remember so far back.
Well, this was Eno's project. We were calling it the Apollo Project, and it was... a fellow by the name of Al Reiner actually put a film together from available NASA footage to celebrate those great missions to the moon. And Brian Eno was fascinated with the idea of weightlessness. But the astronauts were from Texas, and so we wanted to give it a little bit of a country feeling to it, because they were up there listening to George Jones and whatnot, country music. So I had my slide guitar laying around, and Brian said, "What's that?" And so I just fished it out and started playing it, and it made its way onto the record.
It's a gorgeous, gorgeous piece. How do you feel about hearing that? I don't know if you listen to your own music. Maybe you haven't heard this in a while.
It's been a while since I've heard Weightless. It conjures up feelings of that time when Eno and I were making ambient records in Canada from 79 to 83. And we were very, very focused then. It's a nice reminder about dedicating oneself to something you love the most. You know, I just buried myself in that work, and it's almost like time stood still, and we made about 7 or 8 ambient records, and they were really kind of an establishment for me, you know, like a big part of my education. I think the lesson there, like, to find something you love and pursue.
Have you heard Eno's new record, The Small Craft on a Milk Sea, yet?
I haven't heard that record yet, but I want to.
Yeah, it's a beautiful journey, and it's an improvisational record, so we worked with a couple of other musicians on it.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Well, hey, man, anything Eno does, I want to hear.
Likewise. You want to pick another? I'm here with Daniel Lanois. Daniel's playing DJ for us. Doing this stuff is really hard to whittle down a list, isn't it? I mean, just like, I don't know how you do it. Some people just say, it sort of doesn't matter which ones I pick, so I just picked the first four that came to mind. Your process in just coming to the terms with these, picking a list of songs.
Well, Trixie Whitley and I were sitting at the bar last night, and we were just throwing a few tunes around, you know, and we found that we had a few in common, and certainly the Sly and the Family Stone one was one of them. And I used to have this Oldsmobile 442, 1969, like a big
Cutlass Supreme.
Yeah, beautiful car. And my brother installed a massive sound system in it. The trunk of the car was nothing but amps, and it was a bad dog of a system. And my favorite track was "Express Yourself," because it comes on with such power. I just love where Charles Wright took it. You know, he loses his mind, and it's the emotion is very, very powerful. And then at the end, the horns go into this sort of Doppler, almost like an ambulance going by, and it's really doing it on the moon in the jungle too. I like that lyric.
Do you know much about Charles Wright?
I don't know a lot about Charles Wright, but I'm sure he doesn't have any money.
Right.
Express yourself. Express yourself. You don't never need help from nobody else. All you got to do now, express yourself. Whatever you do, do it good.
not what you look like. When you're doing what you're doing, it's what you're doing when you're doing what you look like you're doing. Express yourself.
Oh man, you're having a bad day. This is a song. Listen to.
That's not what you're doing.
Oh, God help us.
Yeah.
I mean, it's speaking of emotion. You know, it's just dripping, man. Charles Wright from Watts, huh? Universal, but
yeah, that's great. You've been working on a new project with Trixie Whitley, and you just played Up Desk. So there'll be soon, if it's not by the time we get this on, a concert of songs the two of you are doing. You're doing a bigger band than that, but tell me about Black Dub and where that came from, and we'll play a song from that.
Yes. Black Dub is the name of the new band that I'm associated with. Trixie Whitley is in the band, Brian Blade, and Daryl Johnson. It's a collective, really. And it came into existence on somewhat of an off chance. I bumped into Trixie in Belgium. And we kept in communication. And then I had an opportunity to invite her to Berklee College in Boston when I was doing a day in the studio for the students. And I said, well, let's bring Trixie in if she's available and record one of her songs.
You've known Trixie through her dad, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Her dad, Chris Whitley, was a friend of mine. And we hung out sort of at the beginning of his career. He came to my place in New Orleans, and I introduced him to some folks there where he made his first record. And so we... So I knew Trixie back then, but she was just a little kid, and then over the years I heard that she was playing the drums and singing and dancing, and so she thought, well, great, good for her, family business, you know. But anyhow, it's she's got a deep soul, and we're lucky to have her in the band, and it's given me an opportunity to investigate a lot of music that I might not on my own with my own vocal styling, you know, and Trixie's, she can go.
For someone who hasn't heard it, what would that be? Is it hard to describe where she's taking you?
Well, the music's quite rhythmic and some of it's psychedelic. It's just given us a chance to go to an emotional place that I've not gotten to in music before, because she's such a powerful singer. So it's got a little funk in it. It's got a little Express Yourself in it. It's got some Jimi Hendrix in it. But mostly it has a foot in the future, and that's what I love about Black Dub.
Were never wrong. Silver.
So can I just tell you what it is I love about what you're doing here? Because in many ways, in some ways it's a straight tune. It's a wonderful song, but then the depth of soul that goes on in the singing, and then the depth of the oral depth, A-U-R-A, makes me want to just hear it over and over again, wanting to hear it over and over again because of those two things, this is the soul and the voice, sonically what you do to music is just intriguing. Was there something that attracted you to music that you said, wow, I'd like to do something like that? Is there a like that that you remember as a kid?
I always liked unusual blends, and some of my favorite songs are pretty out there sonically, and so I'm just operating with those thoughts in mind, like to have that in my music and my inventions, if possible. Not that I'm trying to mimic other people's work or anything, but I like the idea of stretching and going someplace sonically where other people have not gone before.
That made me think of, if it's okay, the Neil Young. He sits down on a stool and plays basically, you know, I mean, you think of just an acoustic guitar record or something, but you had other things in mind. You two worked together on a project. It became more than Neil on a stool. You were talking about your inventions. Yeah. Your guitar, you said you handed him a guitar of yours and said, play this.
Yeah. Well, the invitation to work with Neil was to record acoustic songs. And so I prepared an acoustic guitar, my little baby all-mahogany Guild, and I, with Mark Howard, who engineered the record, we built a sound for Neil that it was a kind of a multi-dimensional acoustic sound. Sort of an automatic bass sound. It has a beautiful stereo recorded sound from an AKG C24.
You said an automatic bass sound, meaning that when he strikes the lowest note on the E string or whatever on the guitar, or D maybe, whatever his tuning is, something else is happening. Either an octave is being...
Yes.
You explain it.
It's just a cheap DJ box that gives you automatic bass. It's like a tourist attraction.
Really. Oh, so it has nothing to do with what he's playing?
Well, of course. The machine responds to the bottom
that's
of the guitar. It's like this is the kind of equipment that people use when they just do like a solo act of the Holiday Inn.
Uh-huh.
You know, they always get this magnificent sound. You wonder how they're doing it. So it's just one of those boxes. and then I introduce a voltage control oscillator from a pickup on the guitar that gives it this kind of human voice sound. So if he strikes a melody, it'll go di-di-da, di-di-da. So it gives it a little a little voice sound, and it's hidden in there, and then there's a tremolo sound from an amp down the hall. So it's a very complex tapestry, and when I let him hear the sound, he was fascinated with it and decided that he would work with it. So he played the guitar with those sounds in mind. So that was the beginning of it, and then we went much more electric from there, and then that's when it got real inventive. As I hear them now, I think the electric guitar sounds might be some of the best that I've been involved with, and I'd say line them up this year, and we should at least get the Grammy Award for the most rock and innovative guitar sound.
Do you want to pick a cut that was a fave of yours and tell me a little about what's going on?
Yeah, we could play Walk With Me. It was a very long song, and I eliminated the first part of the song because I felt that in the middle, that's when it really got cooking. And I
so that beginning that we hear, which opens the album,
is a midway point. Uh-huh. Is a midway point.
It's killer.
And I played it for Neil, and he said, "Well, that's fantastic," except that he missed some of the lyrics that I left out. And I told him, well, I would make an effort to put them in the back of the song, and I built this whole excursion in the back that goes into a shuffle, and it's got a little train sound in there because he loves trains. And then I flew in the lyrics over top of that. So that's it. It's called Walk With Me. Very, very powerful track.
And if anybody out there gets a chance to see, I saw Neil Young perform a lot of these songs, or some of these songs live. Mm-hmm. Certainly it was an entire evening of him solo, and sonically the most amazing sound on a stage that I'd ever heard. Also, have you gone to any of those solo shows yet, the recent ones?
Yes, both Mark Howard and I went to, we were there at the beginning of that tour helping his crew out with some of these sounds. So we were there at the Wiltern in L.A.
Oh, yeah.
And brought a little bit of equipment so they had a better chance of dialing it in. So we made sure that we sent Neil off on the right foot there so he could create the sounds live.
What is the trick to making something so loud but it doesn't hurt? You know what I mean? That's what kills me, is I'll go to shows and they think the power is in the pain, I think, sometimes. But his sound, it's so open and so full, but it never bothers my ears. Yeah. I don't walk out ringing.
Well, Neil uses old Fender amps from the 50s, and so you get a fantastic overdrive and musical sound without too many decibels. Hmm. If he had bigger amps up there, it would have a lot more sound pressure. I think it's a combination of that really good bass and this great overdrive sound in the mid-range, and then it just, because there aren't other musicians up there, mm-hmm. His vocal can clearly be heard.
Mm-hmm. Is this the ending part that you were talking about? Let's just listen and say.
So that ending was built from these dubs. I call them dubs. It's an extension of the Jamaican dub culture. They did mostly spin echoes, but these dubs are little extractions, and then I build them up. And I just created this new ending that seemed to go someplace, and I like the fact that it has a train sound in it.
Did Neil pick up on that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. I'm going to play a cut of yours to talk about.
Yes.
Shine, what, about 7 years ago?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's very much a studio fabrication. And Emmy Lou Harris was visiting me, and she sang the top part. You know, she wasn't sure about her performance. I said, "No, I think it's great."
Yeah,
she's terrific. You know, anything she sings on, she always makes a nice contribution.
Do you listen to your own music? I mean, when was the last time you might have heard this song?
7 years ago.
Yeah. I was wondering about that. And the reason I wonder, I guess, is because you make these tapestries, and then they are these new creations, and then I find this a lot of musicians. They never go back and listen after they've taken all this time to make this beautiful piece of art. Is it then for you the process more than, or is it just you're so busy, you're just on to the next thing? Which is it?
Well, in the case of this song, it is such a studio fabrication that it's not a song that you sing at the campfire.
Right.
And so it doesn't...
But just putting it on to hear, just to like look at your painting, you
know?
Yeah.
Well, I was happy to hear it with you just now. I think that I realize how fascinating and psychedelic the backing is. And it was something that I built in Mexico. And you can hear the sort of psychedelic... Because even to this day, you know, being in Mexico, it, sort of the... The fantasia of the culture gets into one's music. You know? Thanks for playing it.
Oh, it's great to hear it again. You want to take us out on something, Daniel Lanois?
Are you thinking like someone else's track?
Take us out.
In the early 80s, I had some friends in Toronto that turned me on to all the new music that was happening that they were excited about. And one of the tracks was Grandmaster Flash, a track called The Message. Right. Made a big impression on me.
And you've written a book about how you've come to where you've come to in many ways. You want to just tell us the title of the book?
The book is called Soul Mining. I didn't want to write a book, but I wrote a couple of chapters, and on reading back, I realized that there was something in there that might be inspiring to somebody else who was about to set off on a journey of music making. And sort of an against all odds story, because, you know, where I grew up as a teenager, it was not a big crossroads for meeting people particularly, so I just stuck to my story, nose to the grindstone, and just kept building my skills. So it's largely about faith and finding something that you love and pursue.
And the new record, the Black Dub record, you're touring with?
Yes, the Black Dub record, we're very excited about it, and we start touring. In fact, we'll be playing the Bowery Ballroom here in New York City, I think it's the 17th of November. And it's going to be nice to be in the company of my mates, Trixie Whitley, Brian Blade, and Daryl Johnson can't travel right now because he's on parole in Los Angeles. Got side pipe Jim Wilson on bass, and we're going to huddle up, get on a bus, and have a good time.
Good. Well, if they're coming to your town, go see Black Dub. It's a real treat. I got a good sample of it today at the Tiny Desk concert. We'll put that online as well. Thank you, Daniel Lanois. Thanks for doing this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for the invitation.
You can see Daniel Lanois' new project, Black Dub, performing a Tiny Desk concert at npr.org/tinydeskconcerts. There are also many more guest DJ shows with musicians including Tom York, Randy Newman, Ray Davis, Björk, Jantar Bergersen from Sigur Rós, and so many more. You can get all those by going to the All Songs Considered homepage, npr.org/allsongs. And our new 24/7 music channel is up and running. Every song we've ever played for the past 10 years on All Songs Considered can be heard as a streaming music channel. npr.org/allsongs247 is how you find that. I'm Bob Boylan for NPR Music. It's All Songs Considered.
It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.
Broken glass everywhere. People on the stage, you know they just don't care. I can't take the smell, can't take the noise. Got no money to move out, I guess I got no choice. Rats in the front room, roaches in the back. Junkies in the alley with the baseball bat. I tried to get away, but I couldn't get far, cause a man with a tow truck repossessed my car. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. Standing on the front stoop, hanging out the window, watching all the cars go by, roaring as the breezes blow. A crazy lady living in a bag, eating out of garbage pails, used to be a fag hag. Such a dance to tango, skipped the life and dangle. A silk aunt princess seemed to lost her senses. Down at the peep show, watching all the creeps, so she could tell her stories to the girls back home. She went to the city and got so did it. She had to get a pimp, she couldn't make it on her own. Don't push me, cause I'm close to the edge. I'm trying not to lose my head. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under. It's like a jungle sometimes. It makes me wonder how I keep from going under.